Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
It is August, and we've got a big show to kick off the month. We've got football this week, the Hall of Fame game coming up on Thursday, Jacksonville and the Raiders. Preseason starts in full swing the week after that, and we've got position previews beginning on Thursday this week, so it is officially fantasy football season, and we are officially excited as hell to get going here. But we do have to talk about Deshaun Watson, as he's been handed a 6-game suspension, which is still subject to appeal from the NFL. Welcome, everybody, and happy Monday. Happy fantasy football season. Adam Azer, Dave Richard, Jamie Eisenberg here on Fantasy Football Today. We'll not have time for your emails, most likely, but send them in at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Jamie's all dressed sharply because he was just on CBS Sports HQ reacting to the Deshaun Watson news. Let's react to it right now. Jamie, what's your take? 6-game suspension. Again, still, the NFL could appeal, and then it would go to Roger Goodell. So I don't know if Deshaun Watson is out of the woods right now, but if it is a 6-game suspension, give me your basic reaction here, and then we'll get into the rankings and the draftings and all that.
I'd be surprised if the NFL appealed this, although the Calvin Ridley suspension just keeps ringing in my head that he got a year for what he did. But in any event, I think, you know, when you look at Watson's fantasy value, you know, he's at that position where, you know, you swing for the fences, and he's got number one upside. He's got top 10 upside. He's got top 5 upside. And so if you can survive the first 6 games, and we know that it's easy to take, you know, a second quarterback unless it's a, you know, super flex or 2 QB league. He's right now, I ranked him 12th. I wouldn't be surprised if I put him in the top 10. On a per game basis, he has that upside. We've certainly seen it with lesser talent around him. Now he's got an amazing offensive line, you know, quality coach, and some decent weapons, you know, not the full weaponry that you would like to see, but, he'll make enough plays with his legs. So if you can survive the first 6 games of the season, you know, maybe you're 3-3, you get that guy back for week 7 on, you got a pretty good chance to win your league if your running back and quarter and receiver depth is as good as it hopefully can be.
Yeah, in his rookie season in 2017, he took the world by storm, 19 touchdowns in 7 games, 6 starts, and he was the number one quarterback per game. Since then, in 4-point-per-passing touchdown leagues on a per-game basis, Watson has been number 4, number 4, and number 6. And in 6-point-per-passing touchdown leagues, he's been number 6 per game 3 straight seasons. So he's never finished higher than 4th, but, you know, he's been kind of hampered by low pass volume, maybe some bad touchdown luck, that kind of stuff. He's been great, though. So, Dave, we talked about how you can draft Trey Lance, who's been a riser. You can draft Trey Lance before you draft a guy like Rodgers or Cousins or maybe even Stafford, Carr, something like that. If you, maybe you could take the same approach with Watson, and, you know, if you could draft Watson and then draft a steady starter or something like that, who would you draft first at this point, Trey Lance or Deshaun Watson?
Trey Lance. I would rather have the chance at Lance for the first 6 weeks of the season, and I'll know where he stands for those 6 games. If he's good, he's my quarterback the rest of the year, and he should be good week 1 against Chicago, week 2 against Seattle. So I'm expecting Trey Lance to get off to a good start statistically and to keep the job. Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't see being on the 49ers. He'll have job security. It'll be fine. So I'm taking Trey Lance ahead of him. I'm taking Kirk Cousins ahead of him. I'm taking Derek Carr ahead of Deshaun Watson. I drew the line at Tua Tagovailoa, and I do think that Tua does have some upside, but he doesn't have the same type of upside as Deshaun Watson. So Watson's going to be lower for me. He's going to be 16th, and we're assuming he's going to be exactly the same player that he was when we last saw him play in Houston. Now he's going to Cleveland. It's a completely different situation. I think it's the worst receiving core that he's ever had to deal with. I am not certain that they are just going to unleash Deshaun Watson and let him throw like crazy. They might, but I would imagine that he'll be reined in quite a bit. He was reined in at times at Houston, but for the most part, he had his way and he got to throw quite a bit. And he was not only hyper efficient, but he scored a lot of touchdowns. I am nervous about that in Cleveland. And when he comes back, he's playing Baltimore. He's playing Cincinnati, Buffalo, Miami. His schedule when he comes back is tough. The easy part of the Browns' schedule, no question about it, it's those first six games. And that it's a good reason to get behind Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and they can help you get off to a real fast start on your fantasy team. But I'm not convinced that Deshaun Watson's going to come back and be a top six fantasy quarterback. Pretty much any other passer that's got high upside, maybe not as much upside as Watson, but high enough upside, I'll take for the full fantasy season. Remember, these first six games, man, that's almost half of your fantasy regular season.
Yeah.
So I totally get the idea of putting Watson on your team. I'll do it in round 12. I'll do it. I'll put him on my bench in round 12 just to see what happens. But there's no guarantee that he's going to be worth a round 8 pick or something like that. He could be outstanding, but he could also be a bust, and there's definitely room for him to be a pain in the butt on your bench for the first 6 weeks of the season.
Okay. Jamie, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to respond. I just think you're probably more optimistic about his performance, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trusting the talent. I don't really care about the schedule when it comes to him. I'm not sold on Baltimore's defense being great, by the way, anyway, especially watching Hamilton try to cover some of his own teammates yesterday. In any event, I think, you know, talent will win out here. I think he's proven to be one of the best fantasy quarterbacks. I'm hoping the time off will not hinder that. I do think that his system will be great. I think this would be the most protected that he's been. And in terms of being held back, I can't imagine that they made the investment that they did in him to say, go be Baker Mayfield, you know, go be game manager. You know, they're going to let him play and they're going to let him make, you know, plays to what I would assume they in their mind would allow them to, you know, get to a point where they're, you know, competing for a Super Bowl. And he has that type of upside, that type of talent.
Okay. They've been 28th in pass attempts each of the past two seasons.
Yeah, that's going to change.
So what?
I agree. I don't think they're going to be 28th, but I don't think they're going to be 8th.
Well, what do you think? A middle of the pack?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe a little below.
12 to 15.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could see them being, you know, 20th or something. I still feel like they're a run heavy team. If they're not a run heavy team, then what does that mean for Nick Chubb? You know, I mean.
Oh, it means it's big trouble for Nick Chubb.
Well, they could be just a better offensive team to begin with.
It could be, yeah.
Or it could mean more catches for Chubb.
And remember, look, it's not like he needs his passing prowess just to be the reason why he's a good fantasy quarterback. He's going to make plays as well.
Sure.
Dave, Mr. Unite Us All, I like that, says, Dave, last week you said in a Superflex you would aim for two of the first 15 quarterbacks. Do you like Watson enough to make it two of the first 16 quarterbacks?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then you know what you got to do with prioritizing a third quarterback because you got to fill in those first six games.
Okay.
And you don't want it to be Jacoby Brissett.
Right.
You got to aim higher than Jacoby.
And somebody said, MacGruber, great underrated movie, said, going to be hard to separate my personal feelings from fantasy implications with the Watson news. And I'll just say, you know, we're not going to get into that. That's a personal decision. We're just going to give the fantasy analysis. You know, it's a sensitive subject, and I get that. But at this point, I think all we can do is just give the fantasy analysis. All right, let's finish up this fantasy analysis with the rest of the Browns. Okay, so when do you draft? You guys talked about Deshaun Watson. When do you draft Nick Chubb?
I never moved Chubb, you know, with the wide range of Watson not being suspended to missing the entire season. You know, I think his role in the offense is solidified. You know, if there was no Kareem Hunt, he'd be ranked as a top five guy. Unfortunately, because of Kareem Hunt and potentially whatever they decide to do with Ernest Johnson and maybe Jerome Ford, if one of those guys get moved, you know, Chubb is still going to be a contender to lead the NFL in rushing. He's going to be limited as a pass catcher. So, you know, he's got 1,200 to 1,500-yard rushing potential, you know, 200 to 300-yard receiving potential. He's got double-digit touchdown potential. And so he's a pick round two in non-PPR, round three in PPR, just because of his, you know, lack of involvement in the passing game. Kareem Hunt is still a high-end flex, lottery ticket type of guy. As we were ranking the handcuff running backs, he's in the near the top of the list, if not at the top. And you just know what you're getting. You know, he's going to be heavily involved, especially with the receiving core looking like it is. I think he'll be heavily involved in the passing game. So those two guys really didn't move, and I'm not going to move them at all as well.
All right. What about Amari Cooper, Dave?
I've got him in round 7. I'm not excited about him. I think he'll be compiler guy, someone who's just he'll get a decent amount of targets each week. He'll get you a floor of around 10, 12 PPR points per week. He'll score a few times. I don't see him being a dynamo. Certainly without Deshaun Watson, it's not going to happen. You almost don't want to use him the first 6 weeks of the season if you don't have to. But he'll have a little bit more upside. Maybe he hits that floor way more often in the first 6 weeks, and then you up that number closer to 15 for the last 11 games that they're with Deshaun Watson.
When would you draft him if Watson were not suspended at all?
He'd be much higher for me. He'd probably be in that round 4 or 5 range.
He's in round 5 for me now. I mean,
yeah.
You deal with whatever you get in the first 6 weeks, and then difference maker the rest of the way.
Yep. There's enough receivers that you can take in round 5.
There certainly are, but there aren't Cooper. As many as have the upside that he has with the amount of targets that he's going to get from this guy. I mean, I don't know. If he was not suspended, he'd be a top 10 wide receiver.
I remember taking him in the middle of the 3rd round in a draft.
Yeah.
You know, before I did it with, it was after the Watson trade, and it was so Watson and Cooper were on the Browns. I did it as if Watson were not going to be suspended, but that was in my mind right when, you know, we start talking about T. Higgins right there in the middle of round 3. That felt like a great spot for Cooper. The number one wide receiver for Deshaun Watson is always a fantasy superstar. It's been DeAndre Hopkins. It was Will Fuller. And then when Will Fuller got suspended, it was Brandon Cooks for the last 6 games of that season. So I don't know, Dave, I felt like you're a little lower than I thought you'd be on Cooper.
Yeah, I'm not as excited.
Okay. All right.
He's going to get funneled targets. It's just, there's so much upside.
You know who I am excited about, though? It's because of the draft value is David Njoku.
Before we get to that,
his value is going to improve, though.
Can we just follow?
His value will improve, but he's going to end up being drafted as a top 12 tight end.
All right, I'll get to him. I promise. I just want to know: is there a second Cleveland wide receiver worth drafting, or should we just wait 6 weeks?
Njoku is that guy.
All right.
Yeah, I think you wait it out. I mean, you know, you've gotten the reports about the connection with Peoples Jones. David Bell, I believe, is still on the pup list. I know he hasn't done anything yet. So, you know, we'll see what happens there because he's going to be the slot receiver along with Cooper, you know, but when they go 3 wide, he'll probably be the one playing inside and, you know, guy that coming out of college certainly proved that he can be a high volume catch guy as well. I think though, Peoples Jones will be the type of receiver, you know, that you, the MVSs, the big play guys that you just can't rely on week in, week out, but, you know, can be a 2-touchdown guy on a certain week, much better DFS play, but, yeah, I think you're better off just, you know, kind of waiting it out. You know, week 4, week 5, depending on how the waiver wire looks for you, you know, get him a week ahead of time, 2 weeks ahead of time before Watson comes back. And then maybe you have not a breakout player, but, you know, somebody that can end up being the 3rd receiver in a 3 receiver league.
Oh, then so do we draft Njoku? I can't stash a second tight end, I think, for 6 weeks, you know, or do we just pick him up later in the year?
Again, I think, you know, you'll get enough production from Jacoby Brissett. As bad as Brissett is, it's not like he's not going to connect with his receivers and they're not going to make plays. They're not going to make the same type of plays that they'll make with Watson, but they're still going to make plays.
But where do you have Njoku ranked?
Huh?
Where do you have Njoku ranked?
I'm getting to it right now, you know, so he'll be, as Dave said, right in the neighborhood of top 12 guys, you know, with Pat Freiermuth and Irv Smith and Dawson Knox. You know, there's a clear top 11 for me that Njoku won't crack, so I won't put him ahead of Cole Kmet. But in those touchdown-dependent guys in PPR, I probably would take a chance on Njoku ahead of them.
But I'm
in
saying,
where
do you have him ranked now? Where did you have him ranked?
Prior to Watson, he was like 17.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, why am I going to stash that for 6 weeks when I don't know that the payoff is going to be that great?
Well, I had him ranked. My rankings were with the thought of Watson being suspended a full year.
I know. If we think he's not going to basically be worth rostering for 6 weeks, it's going to be.
Then you shouldn't draft him.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
But I think
I think he's still going to have some level of production.
Right. Okay.
Putting up zeros.
I won't believe it. Yeah, he's not, but it's going to be hard to take him as a. I don't know.
And it's an easy schedule. Remember, these first 6 weeks.
It's not that easy.
Easy. Run it down.
The first 4 are probably Carolina, Jets, Steelers, Falcons. Steelers might not be.
Steelers could be tough. Carolina could be tricky.
Yeah, actually, Carolina, Pittsburgh might not be. Jets and Falcons should be pretty easy. Then you have the Chargers and then the Patriots.
Not according to Dean Pease.
Chargers are going to have to throw and play from behind. Brissett's yeah, going to be under pressure all game long.
What if Derwin James is covering tight ends, are you going to start David Njoku with Jacoby Brissett in week five? And then the Patriots are the best against tight ends every year.
The first 4 weeks of the season.
Right.
But you're drafting Njoku late with the idea that he's your streamer to begin the year. And if he catches fire, then you've got a tight end solved all year.
Well, you'll hear more about this on CBS Sports HQ at noon Eastern every day for the rest of your life, because it is Fantasy Football Today time. The video version, hosted by Jamie, will be on CBS Sports HQ noon Eastern Monday through Friday. And then once the season starts, they'll have the Sunday morning extravaganza to get your lineup set and get you ready for the games. You need to download the CBS Sports app. That's where you can watch HQ 24/7. So I have it on my Roku. You can have it on your Apple TV, your Amazon Fire, whatever, your smart TV. CBS Sports app, that's where you watch CBS Sports HQ. It is 24/7. It is free. It is sports coverage that you will not get anywhere else. There's gambling coverage. There's fantasy coverage. There's not people screaming at each other about who the best coach in football. It's not that kind of stuff. Okay, we'll leave that to the other people. You're going to love CBS Sports HQ, and Fantasy Football Today airs noon Eastern Monday through Friday. I'd like to give an apology to all of our loyal listeners who've been sending Fantasy Cops emails. It's like the best segment we have, and I haven't done it. I'll have to find some time for it, and I apologize. It won't be today, but Fantasy Cops, I'm bringing them back. They'll be back. So sorry about that for not getting to those. I would spend more time on the news, but I do want to get to Everyone is a Bust. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about 12 players today. So, Dave, let's start with you. What's the biggest news, other than Deshaun Watson, biggest news or nugget or whatever that you saw from over the weekend?
The biggest news?
Debo.
What happened?
Debo.
Debo getting his contract or DK getting his contract?
I know what it is. I'll help you out. No.
I was going to say Chris Godwin still not participating in practice, and we're going into week two of training camp in Tampa Bay.
Okay, so what does this mean for you as you try to evaluate your rankings with Chris Godwin?
I'm wondering if I've got him too high, and I'm wondering what the Bucs are thinking by not putting him on the PUP list in the first place. I read a report. I shared it with you, Adam. It's from one of the Bucs fan sites that's been around forever. I think it's joebucsfan.com, where they were told that Godwin is still on track to be ready for week one, and they're pleased with his progress, and just because he's not practicing doesn't mean that it's trouble in paradise, but you'd kind of like to see him come back and get on the field. You know, Michael Thomas did. He was on the PUP list for a day. He's come back. He's had tons of good reports, and everybody's getting really excited about Michael Thomas. I'd like to see that happen with Chris Godwin, to have this Bucs offense at full strength to begin the year. I guess we just got to keep waiting and seeing. And for now, when you're drafting Chris Godwin, you're taking a little bit of a leap of faith.
You have him 18th in PPR. Jamie has Godwin 21st. Heath has him 16th. Jamie, what's the biggest news from over the weekend?
I think it's the two contracts. You know, the fact that the hold-ins are over.
Not Metcalf, in Pittsburgh.
Back at practice. Samuel will be back at practice. You don't have to worry about any more trade, you know, discussions with Debo Samuel, if there actually were them. We're taking part. You know, so we'll see now. Hopefully Trey Lance, you know, can start to connect with Debo Samuel, and we get to see what this 49ers offense looks like, and we get to see how DK Metcalf does with his new quarterback. You know, so I'm glad that we have these stories behind us.
All right, well, you missed the big news. I really think it's what the Cowboys and now Jerry Jones are saying about Ezekiel Elliott.
Sure.
I said this with Chris on FFT and 5 last night. Based on reports, tell me why I should draft Javonte Williams ahead of Ezekiel Elliott right now.
I was just looking at that.
If the Cowboys are talking about him being, you know, they had the, what did Jerry Jones say? That he has to be the focus of the run game.
The feature
of the run game. And what Jerry Jones says carries a lot of weight. And there's still a competition going on, obviously, for the RB2 spot in Denver. But, you know, Javonte is probably not going to have the same workload that Zeke has. That's my interpretation right now. I don't love dissecting quotes because there's a lot of fluff, but I don't think this is. So tell me why, if you still have it this way, why Javonte should be drafted ahead of Zeke.
If they have the same workload, Javonte is going to destroy him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true, and I'll tell you why.
Well, you just said that, though.
No, I'll tell you why. If they have the same touches, it depends on goal line, because I know Zeke is getting all of the touchdowns. I still don't know that in Denver, you know?
Well, I mean, look, there's obviously some uncertainty with Javonte Williams, which is why he's not ranked as highly, at least for me, as he was prior to the Melvin Gordon return. But the fact that early in camp that Gordon is not working with the first team offense as much as he is working with the second and third team offense tells me that they like Javonte enough that they're going to give him the opportunity to win the to be the featured guy, not to win the job. He's obviously the starter, but to be the featured guy. With Zeke, you know he's going to be the featured guy, but just how successful is he going to be? How productive is he going to be? How much of it was the knee? How much of it was just he's starting to really tail off? They lost two offensive linemen this offseason. You know, how much is that going to be of an impact that he's not as productive because the line was really something that was saving him and making him a above average player to an elite player, you know, during his heyday. And so, look, there are things about Ezekiel Elliott, the point in his career, the fact that he's already, you know, dealt with an injury that he had to play with. What happens if he gets hurt even more significantly? Now he misses time. And Tony Pollard, every time he touched the ball last year, was much more explosive. You know, I don't care any metrics you want to tell me. My eyes told me enough. And so
the metrics back you up.
The situation in Dallas, I'm avoiding Ezekiel Elliott. The fact that his ADP on Fantasy Pros is 30th, good luck. Enjoy him. I hope he does well for you. I will not be taking him until round 4.
Okay. Like the passion. All right, so let's do some more news and notes here. Quarterback notes. Looks like it's Mitchell Trubisky's job. Mitchell Trubisky has been told, basically been told it's his job to lose, according to Peter King. It doesn't seem like Kenny Pickett is anywhere close to winning that job.
No, but Mason Rudolph has looked good so far.
Yeah.
I would imagine Rudolph will tail off at some point here, and Trubisky will be the replacement for Big Ben. We'll call him Big Mitch. Big
Mitch. They were using Pickett on holding drills. Like he's far away.
Yeah.
That's okay. I mean, think about it for your projections for that Steelers offense.
It's wild because he was considered the most NFL ready quarterback in the draft class.
Well,
and he's brutal so far.
Trey Lance, based on what I've read, I haven't read a lot of good stuff on Trey Lance.
It's been hot and cold. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't read he sucks, but. Something to keep an eye on here. We don't have to dissect it. It's early in camp. They're not even playing with pads. I think that starts today. But not the greatest start for Trey Lance. Of course, he hasn't had Deebo Samuel. Running back news. Talked about Ezekiel Elliott. Joe Mixon, you know, there was this whole thing about how they're over the whole not being on the field on the final drive of the Super Bowl. But he actually said that he was used in the two-minute drill throughout the postseason, but not on that drive. I thought that was interesting. Because you know that would signal a more receiving upside for Mixon,
That's if they carry it over into this year.
Exactly, and he did have a pretty big jump in catches late in the year when Burrow started throwing more.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he'll be on the everyone is a bust list later. Rams rookie running back Kyren Williams could return for the third preseason game. Kansas City rookie running back Isaiah Pacheco got some second team work ahead of Ronald Jones.
He had some first-team work, too.
Oh, how about that?
They're mixing him in, but I'm still scared that the Chiefs are going to mix everybody in, and they're going to go full committee at running back.
It's good, though, for Edwards-Helaire that the guy with the most robust resume of the group is not pushing him for touches right now.
Jones, right.
Yeah.
Here are a couple of quotes from ESPN reporters covering their beat from Jameson Hensley for the Ravens. J.K. Dobbins is expected to be back by the start of the regular season, but it's uncertain whether he will be at full strength at that point. Gus Edwards is farther behind Dobbins in his recovery and could miss a chunk of the season.
And both of them are currently on the PUP list, yes?
Yes.
That's how you're supposed to use the PUP list.
Right. Here's one from Nick Wagner, who covers the 49ers for ESPN. Ideally, Tyrion Davis-Price offers short yardage and goal line help,
yes,
with Elijah Mitchell handling the bulk of the work. But injury concerns about Mitchell are real, and it wouldn't be a surprise to see Davis-Price and Jeff Wilson involved early and often, even if Mitchell hangs on to the starting spot. The goal line thing there stood out. That would be bad for Mitchell.
When you go back and watch Davis-Price in college, he's a physical back. He's a big boy. And it kind of made you wonder what was it about? Was that the thing that the 49ers really liked about him? And they figured they can just teach him their wide zone running scheme along the way. Cause I don't know if he was necessarily proficient in that at LSU. Someone who follows LSU could let me know if they think he was. It's definitely going to be a mix in San Francisco. It hurts Elijah Mitchell to a significant degree.
Okay. And Travis Etienne has been the star of training camp, according to Jaguar report. And Peter King was at Giants camp and he came away impressed with Saquon Barkley and rookie wide receiver Wandale Robinson. Let's go to wide receiver news. Chase Claypool.
Has Saquon cracked the top 12 yet for everybody?
Overall?
No, just at running back.
Oh, he's been there all offseason for me.
What about you, Dave?
No, he hasn't, but he's pretty much getting there.
He's almost in the top 10. I moved ahead of Fournette.
All right, Chase Claypool day-to-day with a shoulder injury. Deebo Samuel signed a three-year deal. I thought this was interesting. Football Outsiders publishes a list every year of under-the-radar prospects. So for this year, it's players who were drafted in round three or later for the last three seasons, between 2019 and 2021. So not 2022, the three seasons prior to that. Round three or later, and they have not played more than 500 offensive snaps or defensive snaps. They lowered the threshold for running backs that they have not played more than 300 offensive snaps. So their number one kind of under-the-radar prospect for this year is Chargers wide receiver Josh Palmer. And number three is Ramondre Stevenson. So he's just
my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you guys like Stevenson. Palmer doesn't necessarily get drafted, but just a name to know.
I keep saying it. Between Josh Palmer and KJ Osborne, they're going to be in offenses that are going to push the ball down the field. They're going to be in situations where you're going to see pass volume be certainly in their favor. And they are an injury away, as we saw last season, from being very relevant and very viable and potentially, I don't know, league winner is the type of designation you want to put on them. But Osborne numbers popped last season when Adam Thielen was out, and they love him. And Palmer's numbers were certainly moving in the right direction toward the end of last season, and they love him. And we know Mike Williams has battled some injuries. And Keenan Allen's getting to a point in his career where maybe you have to worry about that a little bit as he's getting, into his early 30s or, approaching 30. These are two easy players to take at the end of your draft. And if they struggle or don't get involved early, then that's the type of move you make to move on from them. You might regret it at some point during the season. But they're so cheap and they have so much upside. They're so worth drafting.
Disposable late round wide receivers. We're always interested in those kinds of guys. They both qualify. Do they also qualify as friendship strategy receivers for those of us in deeper leagues that take an early pick on Justin Jefferson or Keenan Allen or Mike Williams?
Absolutely. Or Thielen. Any which way you want to shake it out. Yeah.
Backing up wide receivers typically isn't something that we do. In the case of the Chargers guys, I kind of like it because I agree. I think Palmer's a good talent.
Okay. So we're talking about Josh Palmer for the Chargers and
we could find receivers on other teams. Like as we go along, I mean, you might qualify Valdes-Scantling as being one of those guys.
Yeah.
Van Jefferson, if he were healthy, would be one of those guys. As we talk about teams, there's plenty of other receivers that could be friendship strategy.
Yeah, maybe not so much Van Jefferson right now.
No, because he's hurt.
Okay, let's talk more about wide receivers here. ESPN's Eric Woodyard covers the Lions, and he answered the question, who will lead the Lions in receiving yards? All signs are pointing to St. Brown enjoying a breakout second season after setting numerous rookie records in 2021. St. Brown's production skyrocketed when Lions coach Dan Campbell gave former tight ends coach Ben Johnson a bigger role in play calling responsibilities. Ben Johnson is now the offensive coordinator and will find creative ways to use the Lions' rising star. And I thought that was interesting because to think about Amon-Ra St. Brown, we always say his production skyrocketed when Swift was out and for most of it when Hockenson was out. But I don't know that we've ever attributed it to the change in play caller. So that's another way to look at it, and maybe that helps him going into year two.
He had a 33% target share.
Yeah.
Look, during the end of last season. It's not going to happen
I know, but
again.
He was a top five receiver, right? So nobody's drafting him to be what he was at the end of last season. He was a top five receiver in those six games. He's already discounted. Pretty significant.
But you're saying he's discounted, yes, based on where he finished, but he's still going as the 23rd receiver off the board on Fantasy Pros. Like, that's
too early.
I just don't understand that. Like,
right.
Could Feels he still early. Be in that range? Yes, absolutely. But again, we attribute it to the other guys not being there, and now you want to attribute it to the play caller. Those guys were there, and they added DJ Chark, in terms of Hockenson and Swift.
He averaged 11 yards.
If Jameson Williams at any point in the season starts to play and produce, like, how much is he going to be that successful? So I feel like the situation for him, and I think it's almost worth, lumping Elijah Moore in the same boat because, his numbers popped in those five games before he got hurt. He did it without Zach Wilson. St. Brown did it without the other guys in the field. There are legitimate things you can point to and say, okay, this is maybe why this happened. Hopefully it's not the case. And Adam, you brought this up, that Elijah Moore's real world talent versus his fantasy production, something that I said about Stephon Diggs prior to going to Buffalo. sometimes it just doesn't marry each other. They don't marry each other, you know, and I think that could be the case with Moore and for St. Brown. Look, you asked me at the end of the NFL draft last year, who's the guy that I think could be a surprise receiver? This was the guy that I told you, you know, based on his scenario, because it wasn't crowded. Now it's a little bit more crowded. Just don't trust him as much.
Yeah. I feel like as we've gone through the offseason, there have been three players that I feel like I've been higher on than everyone else. And I do need to just clarify. And those players to me are Joe Burrow, probably Dawson Knox, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. And higher on than all of my colleagues, but I still think they're all being overdrafted, right? Like St. Brown's going ahead of Adam Thielen, Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney, Michael Thomas. I mean, he is way too high, way too high. Dawson Knox is tight end 10. I think that's too high. Joe Burrow is QB 5 or something like that. That's too high.
Six.
It depends. Right. It depends where you look. But so, well, even though it's like I'm making the case for these guys, but still agreeing with you that they're busts. I draft them before you guys do, but totally think they're going too high.
You know how many targets he had inside of 10 yards during his 6-game streak?
3.
Lower.
-3.
2.
Two. Okay.
6 games.
Carson Wentz seems to have a good connection with Jahan Dotson. And Aaron Rodgers likes his wide receivers. And Alan Lazard or Amon-Ra St. Brown, would you take?
Lazard, which sounds weird to say, but like a situation there.
Okay, tight end news. Pat Freiermuth has a minor hamstring injury, and Taysom Hill, who's a tight end, is out with injured ribs. And offensive line news, Tampa Bay center Ryan Jensen is going to be out for a significant amount of time, not necessarily the whole season, but a significant amount of time. Chicago center Lucas Patrick is out indefinitely with a hand injury.
Yeah, he broke his hand.
Yeah, and that's a bad offensive
line. Not a good thing
line.
When you're a center.
And Kansas City left tackle Orlando Brown will report to camp today. He will play this season on the franchise tag. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to do our best. Everyone is a Bust is a fun show, but usually we don't have the Deshaun Watson breaking news eating into the episode, so we'll do our best to get to as many as we can. Bust cases for the elite players, do we buy them? How legit are these bust cases? How much should you be concerned? We'll take a break. We'll come right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus. Official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome back, everybody. So we're being Debbie Downer today, negative Nancy, Dave Downer. It's a negative Jamie, Jay. I don't know.
Unfortunately, there's nothing negative about me these days.
Yes, Dave is referring to his COVID results. He's still testing positive 10 days in.
Still, man.
Still.
But it sounds like you're feeling better.
Yes. I don't sound like Barry White anymore.
Well, we do miss that. I'm not going to lie. All right.
Well,
so
in that case,
I'm going to make all of you make a bust case. Both of you make a bust case, and the other one will tell the listeners, the viewers, if you agree with it. Jamie, Jonathan Taylor is number one in ADP. Make a bust case. Everyone is a bust, including Jonathan Taylor.
The bust case for Jonathan Taylor is his role in the passing game gets worse because of an increase in Nyheim Hines' role. He does not score as many touchdowns because Matt Ryan, they trust him more in the red zone, and he does not lead the NFL in rushing. So he goes from the number one, this is non-injury related, but he goes from the number one overall selection and number one overall pick to more of a late first, early second round selection because of a downturn in production, especially in PPR, and you regret drafting him ahead of a healthy Christian McCaffrey or anybody else at the running back position.
You buy it, Dave?
No, not at all. This is the hardest player to make a bus case for. He's scored in, I think, 18 of his last 23 games. He's the total package as far as running backs go. He's young. He's strong. Even though Matt Ryan's there, I still think they're going to be a run-centric offense. I think they'll revolve around Taylor. Maybe not quite as much as last year, but still a good amount. I think Nyheim Hines is probably going to take work away from the other pass catchers more so than Jonathan Taylor. As long as he's upright and he's running, he's just an absolute cannonball. And I think there's a chance. I don't know if he can do better touchdown-wise than what he did last year, but I think he can rumble for another 2,000 yards this year and 2,000 total yards. And I think he'll be well worth the number one pick in that he will be a consistent stat producer for fantasy managers all year long.
The one thing, I know you want to move on, but Frank Reich saying when he was touting Nyheim Hines that they got too run-centric for him was the only thing that kind of, you know, made me a little bit like, oh, what does that mean? And then you go back and you look, and how much of it was a Carson Wentz situation or how much of it was just that Jonathan Taylor was that good? I hope it was that Jonathan Taylor was that good because this is when he became an MVP candidate. But I think it was their first 8 games. I think he only had one game with more than 20 total touches. And then in his last 9, when they went 6-3, he had 8 of those over 20 total touches. And so if they want to throw the ball more, where does it come at the expense of? Now, again, sure. You know, this is clearly just nitpicking because we all have Taylor ranked first. You know, I did hear something, and I know you want to move on. Is McCaffrey next? Because we can
yep. I just want to point out, Jonathan Taylor scored the fewest PPR fantasy points for a number one running back since 2015. And that was in the first year where we had 17 games. So he played 17 games and he scored the fewest PPR fantasy points for a number one running back since 2015. So I actually think that it's the hardest player to make a bust case for, but since he's going to go number one in most leagues, he does have more bust potential. Like for example, I think Dalvin Cook is very hard to make a performance-based bust case for. I was trying to do
what
that.
Was McCaffrey?
McCaffrey, of course. But mm-hmm. Dalvin Cook might go 7th or 8th. So, you know, if he plays like the 12th best player, it won't feel like that much of a bust. If Jonathan Taylor plays like the 12th best player, it's going to feel like a bigger bust, if that makes sense.
Yes. I mean, look, you know, you're talking, it's mostly McCaffrey because I don't think anybody's taking Dalvin Cook ahead of Jonathan Taylor. It's and I found this question interesting. I forget who posed it on Twitter, so I apologize. Make a case for Taylor over McCaffrey without saying injury.
In non or half PPR.
In any format.
Oh, well, he's going to score a lot more touchdowns. It's that simple.
Okay, so do it in PPR.
I'm not going to. I'm just not going
to. The case is that, you know, the fantasy world and the skeptical fantasy managers aren't the only ones that are worried about Christian McCaffrey breaking down and that the Panthers are going to take steps to start limiting how
where
much
is their example
they play him. What do you mean?
Matt
Rhule hasn't played a game yet since.
But nobody said that though. You're just speculating.
No, Matt Rhule has said a number of times we need to keep him healthy.
Yes, but
you've already seen him in practice. He's been sitting out of practices. Look, this isn't to say that when it's 3rd down and 6, he's going to be off the field. I'm worried about
but again.
Him
take,
not seeing
take health out of the
touches.
Equation. Take no. health out of the equation.
Is this taking health out of the equation?
Yes.
Because this is performance based, Jamie. If he's not playing 25 touches a game, and if God forbid he doesn't get every single goal line carry like he used to get, this is going to lower the ceiling for him a little bit. He's still going to be really good when he's healthy. Still going to average right around 24, 25 fantasy points per game. That is better than Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
But I am positive the Panthers coaching staff, on one hand, they need to win. But on the other hand, they know that they cannot win without Christian McCaffrey.
So what's
so
the,
I bet,
what's the best
I bet
approach
a lot
if you're
of empty,
the Panthers? Is it to run Christian McCaffrey into the ground, or is it trying to preserve? And I'm not saying this because I know I don't know.
I think if they find themselves to be a competitive team this year, they're going to take the reins off of McCaffrey, and then
do that early?
I don't know if they do. And when the type of carries that I'm thinking they don't give Christian McCaffrey are going to be 2nd and 7 in late first quarter. They're not hurrying up or anything like that. Like that's an easy carry. That's an easy rep to not give him, especially if they're going to throw on that rep. I'm a little worried about what Deontay Foreman means as far as short yardage goal line goes. And are they going to take McCaffrey out of those situations?
That would shock
because
me.
There's going to be so much. I think they will some of the times. Really? I think they will some of the times, but not all.
That's for a lot of running backs, though.
It is. But part of Christian McCaffrey's appeal is that he scores tons of touchdowns. And anything that takes off five touchdowns off the course of the season,
I don't think that's Christian McCaffrey.
Would hurt a little bit.
Is that you're not drafting him to score touchdowns.
You're drafting him to catch 100 passes. Right. I don't know if he gets that high. I really don't. I think that there's a chance that they hold him back a little bit until they're really comfortable with his health and they're really in a playoff race.
So Matt Rhule did say that he wants the offense to be a little bit more diverse in terms of the players that are involved. He just felt like they were too dependent on Moore and McCaffrey, basically. Specifically Moore, I guess. So I don't know. I guess you could say the Panthers spread the ball around a little bit more, ease up on the workload for McCaffrey. I mean, I'm looking at in 2020 in half PPR, he averaged 27.3 points per game. That was only in three games. Let me see what he did in 2019 in half PPR. 25.7, whereas number two was Derrick Henry at 19.4.
It's so funny that in half PPR, he's better than the guy who the next year was in full PPR.
It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. I don't know. It's hard to make a bust case for McCaffrey that's not health based. Dave, I think you're doing it, but I think you still acknowledge that he's amazing. So it's just
I'm drafting with people like me, I'm taking him fifth overall. I just think that there's going to be at least two or three people in every single draft that will not care at all that McCaffrey got hurt the past 2 years, and they're gonna have amnesia for it, and they're gonna take him as early as they possibly can. And I'm not saying that it's gonna be wrong.
Yeah,
it could be. Time will tell if that's wrong or right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about. Oh, by the way, here's a question: how much does Baker throw to running backs?
About 20%.
But you know
most
what?
Most of his years in Cleveland, it was about 20%.
Cam Newton never threw to his running backs. And then he threw over and over and over again to Christian McCaffrey. If you have Christian McCaffrey and you don't throw to your running backs, you're doing it wrong. Plus, he doesn't just line up out of the backfield, right? He'll line up out wide in the slot, whatever. All right, Austin Eckler. Dave, make the bust case for Austin Eckler. He was number two overall in all formats. He was number three per game in all formats behind Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor. He had 70 catches. And in week one, he had zero targets. It was the weirdest thing. But anyway, make your bust case for Austin Eckler.
I believe he's coming off of a career year. 20 touchdowns for him, 1,558 total yards. Those are both career highs. And the Chargers thought so much of it that they drafted Isaiah Spiller, who for the draft capital they used was an excellent pick. He's a quality three down player. He's good at catching the ball out of the backfield. Certainly a more physical running back than Austin Eckler was considered before last season. Eckler is also on a team with a ton of great pass catchers. Not only do they have Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, we've already talked about Josh Palmer. They added Gerald Everett at tight end. They're going to be able to spread the ball around quite a bit this year in LA. And they also have themselves one of the better looking defenses on paper. That might mean that they actually slow down some of the offenses that they face. That means that there could be more running. Will the coaching staff put Eckler in the 4-minute drill when they've got somebody like Spiller who can be a good sustainer and a good physical back to help grind down the clock late in the fourth quarter? Eckler can be a good fantasy running back, but I don't think he's got a shot to really hit that upside that we saw last year.
Jamie, Do you believe it? You buy that bust case for Eckler?
I don't buy the bust case for him in terms of being a first-round pick if he stays healthy. But I don't know if he's going to finish as a top five guy based on history. And this is what makes me concerned about him and Henry and you know, these guys that are getting a little bit older, Fournette, Connor. It's 5 years since a 27-year-old running back has been a top six, 27 or plus running back has been a top six PPR guy.
Yeah, LeSean McCoy. And
Eckler's 27 and Henry's 27 plus.
Right.
So can they buck that trend? Sure.
He's not the typical 27-year-old, right? He doesn't have
totally.
All
you know,
the wear and tear.
You know, this is why I feel more comfortable about him than Henry in PPR, is that anytime you have a guy that's going to make the majority of his production, successful production, without having to rely on touchdowns, or let me rephrase, anybody that can be successful without having to rely on touchdowns, you feel a little bit more safer about. And so, yeah. You know, there was a little bit, if you go back to Justin Herbert's rookie season, remember when he first came back from, I believe he missed two or three games for an injury. He wasn't throwing to Eckler as much. And then all of a sudden it was just like, it was nonstop to Eckler. And then that carried over to last year. I'm sure a lot of that had to do more with Anthony Lynn and his just, you know, inept play calling. But, you know, Brandon Staley's offense and Lombardi's offense and what they do, getting Eckler the ball, as long as he's not coming off the field significantly for Isaiah Spiller, he should be a star.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the Spiller thing could be interesting because he dominated carries near the goal line. And also he caught, I think the easiest case to make against Eckler is he caught 8 touchdowns last year. He is the only running back since Marshall Faulk in 2020 and 2000 and 2001 to have 8 or more receiving touchdowns. And Eckler has done it twice. So you can buy it a little bit, but he also had 2 receiving touchdowns in 2020. So if that number comes down, he could be a little bit disappointing, particularly in non or half PPR. All right, Cooper.
Does it help that all the receiving touchdowns came in the red zone?
Yeah, but no. But did you see the stat I tweeted last night?
I did not.
I was looking at where his touchdowns came from, and yes, they did come in the red zone.
But only one from inside the 5.
Only one from inside the 5. Only 2 of his 8 came from inside the 10, I believe. So, Alvin Kamara. I was like, what does that look like compared to Kamara, the other prominent pass-catching running back? I didn't look at McCaffrey yet. But Alvin Kamara and Austin Eckler have combined for 34 receiving touchdowns, doing this off memory here, in their careers, and 24 of them came from outside, 10 yards out or longer. It's very weird. Those guys catch a lot of touchdowns and rarely from inside the 10-yard line. It's... I don't know what to make of it. I even said, I have no idea. I'm just tweeting it. But yeah, all right. Anyway, let's go to Cooper Kupp. Jamie, make the bus case for Cooper Kupp, who was the number one non-quarterback in all formats last year. I'm pretty sure. Could be wrong about that in non-PPR, but certainly in half and full.
He goes from having breakfast with Matthew Stafford to only lunch and dinner, and that ruins all of their plans, and everything goes awry.
He was not number one in half in non-PPR. I'm sorry. Not even close. Taylor crushed him. But sorry, go ahead.
Allen Robinson proves to be a better running mate than he's ever had, certainly better than he had last year, so better than peak Robert Woods and better than what Odell Beckham and Woods combined to be last season. Teams now decide they're going to just put 3 guys on him and say, you're not getting open. We're going to make Matthew Stafford go elsewhere. You noted this when we were having the Cam Akers conversation, but Pro Football Focus disagrees with you about the offensive line, but let's just say the offensive line is bad.
Not bad. Just significantly worse, but maybe middle.
Well, you said significantly worse. They don't consider them to be significantly worse.
Okay.
But if they are significantly worse, and you know, Stafford doesn't have time to connect with Cooper Kupp, again, you know, these guys that we're talking about here are, barring injury, I think still have the path to being, you know, first round caliber talents. It's a matter of, are they top 5, top 10, or are they, you know, bottom 10, or toward the end of the top 10, or you know, closer to 15. I think if Cooper Kupp stays healthy, you know, he's certainly proven to be a target hog and a significant pass catcher, whether it was Jared Goff or Matthew Stafford. Stafford just unleashed him, and hopefully that continues.
Dave, what do you think about that bus case?
I think you can make a stronger bus case. He had never been over 9 targets per game. I think it's even 8.5 targets per game until last year, and then he averaged 11.2 targets per game. It feels unlikely to repeat at 11.2 targets per game. Does he fall back to where he's been over most of his career, which is right around, well, in 2020, he was 8.3. 2019, he was 8.4. Does he fall back to there? And is that enough of a drop to open the door for someone like Justin Jefferson to just win on volume? Because Jefferson had almost 10 targets per game last year, and that's an offense that's expected to throw more this year. So could that cost Cooper Kupp? Could Allen Robinson cost Cooper Kupp? Could I be dead wrong on Cam Akers? And Akers is just the engine of this Rams offense. And they decide that they're going to be a little bit more balanced than they were last year. They were 60% pass last year. Do they tone that down? Do they tone it down because Stafford's arm might be an issue? Remember, he's kind of on a pitch count in camp this year. So I think there's plenty more that can go wrong for Kupp compared to somebody like Jonathan Taylor that could see his numbers go down. I've spent a lot of time debating in my mind Kupp versus Jefferson. And I don't see enough of a target drop. I don't think he'll go as far as 8.4. I think he'll be still right around 10 targets per game. And if he's getting the same amount of targets per game as Jefferson, I'll take Kupp to have the better year.
All right, next up is Derrick Henry, but I'm going to switch the order here and just go with Jefferson. Let's go right into it. I'm going to make the bust case for Justin Jefferson. I'm just going to give you these numbers. He was a lot better before Adam Thielen got hurt. And before Thielen got hurt, he was on pace for 151 targets. Still great numbers. 1,587 yards, 9 touchdowns on 151 targets. And then after Thielen got hurt, that jumped up to 196 targets. So he went from 151 target pace to a 196 target pace. Numbers were great both times, but they were better, obviously, without Thielen. You have to point out that in the three games leading up to the Thielen injury, he started to really get going. So it started, and then Thielen got hurt and barely played over the last six games of the season, and Jefferson went nuts. And that, by the way, that pace for Jefferson with those last six games without Thielen included the Sean Mannion game, which was awful. So that's the case. I mean, that's the case right there for Jefferson. He's being drafted as wide receiver two. Last year, he was wide receiver four per game. So he's never been wide receiver two. It's almost like,
how dare he in 2 years never get there?
Yeah, but it's also like Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams got traded and their values fell a little bit. So it's pushed Jefferson up perhaps. And he did get a boost when Thielen was off the field. So that's the bust case.
That's included in the red zone. He hasn't been a dominator in the red zone like other receivers that you would expect to take this high in a fantasy draft would be. 2021, he had 20 targets in the red zone. He caught 7 of them for touchdowns. 3 of the 7 touchdowns came with Thielen out. In 2020, he only had 10 red zone targets. I remember talking about this with him going into last year. Barely targeted in the red zone. Only one of his 3 touchdowns that came in the red zone as a rookie came with Thielen out. So and that was only one game. I get a little bit worried about that, but then I also understand that this is a new coaching staff, and I figure I'm putting a lot of faith in Kevin O'Connell that he will be a lot more attentive toward the passing game, won't be so stodgy like Mike Zimmer was. He likes his quarterback. Did you see what Mike Zimmer said about Kirk Cousins and that come from behind game from last year? That was something. They obviously did not get along. I think Cousins will get along with O'Connell. It means a lot of throwing, and I think there will be ways for Justin Jefferson to have another very good year.
Okay.
In other words, I don't believe that the red zone woes are going to continue.
Okay.
I think that'll revert a little.
And I know you guys expecting a big boost. They were 11th in pass attempts last year. So, you know,
it's not about a boost in volume. It's about how the passes are distributed and the routes are changed and the tempo is different. I mean, you know, they were forced to throw last year because their defense fell apart. I don't care if their defense is healthy. You're going to see throws on first down. They didn't do that on a regular basis. You're going to see just, you know, second and one where Mike Zimmer would call a run play. They're going to take shots. It's a different feel for Kevin O'Connell. He's talked about that. The players have talked about that. So, you know, when teams are expecting them to run, they're going to throw, you know, until teams adjust, they should have some success.
Okay. Let's go to Derrick Henry then. And just to speed things up, I think it's an easy bust case in it's a health thing, right? He's older and coming off the foot injury. I don't know that there's is there a performance bust case? The only thing is, you know, he ran for 2,000 yards and in full PPR, he was in not half and full PPR. He ran for 2,000 yards in 2020 and he was RB4 per game. And actually, he was RB3 in non-PPR per game because he just has no receiving production. He did have 18 catches in 8 games last year, so he was on pace for 38 catches, which would have been by far a career high. Is there a performance bust case for Derrick Henry, Dave?
I don't think so. Not unless you tie it to the injury. I don't think the Titans are going to do what I think the Panthers might do with McCaffrey and say, whoa, 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 we need our big horse healthy. We need to, you know, start giving more work to other running backs here. And they take him off the field. And maybe they do take him off the field in certain situations where you don't expect him to get a touch anyway, like third downs. I think their identity revolves around Derrick Henry. I think they're comfortable with where he's at in his recovery. He's practicing. The injury he's coming back from, it is a problem, but it's not a soft tissue injury. As long as he's comfortable playing on the foot, and my guess is that he is, he's already had one game coming back from the broken foot. I think he'll be fine. I think he's still going to get a lot of work. He led running backs in touches per game last year. He averaged over 23 PPR points per game last year. Again, that's not as high as McCaffrey's highs, but that's still really good. And you mentioned that he finished fourth in PPR per game 2 years ago. That's the lowest he's been each of the last 3 years in PPR.
Yeah,
I think, and I look at the division. Houston's run defense doesn't scare me. Jacksonville's run defense doesn't scare me. Indianapolis doesn't have Shaquille Leonard anymore in the middle of that defense, at least not right now. We'll see if he comes back and he's fine. I think he could just go on a mad run again this year and just be, yeah, everyone will look back and shake their heads and say, all right, yeah, he's not going to catch 50 balls, but he's still running for 150 yards and scoring at least one touchdown a week.
Jamie, I've got a better bus case for Derrick Henry. This offense is a sinking ship. Ryan Tannehill regressed last year. They don't have A.J. Brown anymore. We're relying on Robert Woods and a rookie to be their receiving game. Their offensive line could suck this year. PFF has them pre-training camp as 27th. They lost an offensive tackle and an offensive guard who were actually very good in run blocking last year, but bad in pass blocking. His efficiency went way down last year. 4.3 yards per carry was super low for Derrick Henry. Where are some warning signs for a guy who does not catch passes, who could be on a bad offense? Yikes. Do you buy that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have a rank that way, but I buy it. You know, I can certainly see that happening. He's an alien, you know, so he's, you know, able to overcome a lot of these things, and I think he will. But again, you know, history is not on his side for finishing at this level. History's also been something that he's, you know, proven that he can, you know, shatter by bouncing back from a 2,000 yard season and performing at a high level. Most guys that run for 2,000 yards don't do that. So, you know, he's got that league rushing title within his sights, and I'm sure he will compete for it. He's got the opportunity once again to score 15 touchdowns again, 15 plus touchdowns again. I hope he has the opportunity to be a 30 catch guy, but he's just somebody for whatever reason I tend to avoid based on where you have to draft him. Like, I'm taking Cooper Kupp and Justin Jefferson ahead of him in PPR. I'm taking McCaffrey and Eckler ahead of him in PPR. And so I haven't had the opportunity yet in a draft, probably because of Dave, because Dave's high on Henry, where if Dave's picking in front of me, to see him fall to that 6, 7, 8 spot, which is where I think he's probably going to end up. I don't know where his ADP is right now, but
right. That won't happen unless I'm picking first.
Right. You know, so, but to be honest, I think just looking at the people that we draft with, and we draft with a lot of the same people, which will change. I don't know if Dave is the only one that's as optimistic on Derrick Henry, because he tends to not necessarily get selected in those first 3 to 5 picks.
I saw him going round 2 in a draft yesterday.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
An FFPC draft.
Well, he's fifth in ADP. He's fifth in PPR ADP. I think people probably see a lot of similarities between Henry and Jonathan Taylor. What's the difference to you guys, so, other than age?
Age, big. Offensive line, big.
I think the offense and the offensive line definitely hurts. I don't see there being somebody like Nyheim Hines in the Tennessee offense that could potentially take work away from Henry. And I would be encouraged by the 18 catches in 8 games.
Yeah, they were very, very front-loaded. He had 9 catches, I think, in his first 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
But even after that, he was on like a 28-catch pace, I think, or 26, 20-something like that, which is better than what he'd done before. His career high is 19. But maybe without A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, for what that's worth. Yeah. There was only one game last year that he played without Brown and Julio, and he had 2 catches on 2 targets. So it was a small sample size, but maybe
the only other thing I would add is that Tennessee tends to be a smartly coached team. They find ways to win.
Yeah. Well, I think using him about 30 carries a game last year or whatever was probably not smart. Right.
Well, it ended up biting them in the butt.
Yeah. And then he comes back in the playoffs.
Too, sure.
Yeah. Crazy workload, mm-hmm. basically. Yeah. But all right, we're gonna stop here. That's the top 6. We'll do the second 6 tomorrow. I was hoping to do round 1 and round 2, but that's okay. We've got a fun week coming up. We've got value-based drafting, an explanation for what value-based drafting is, why it could help you on draft day on Wednesday, and Thursday is quarterbacks, and Friday is tight ends. We'll be previewing those positions, getting ready for drafts. They're coming up for a lot of people. So thank you very much, everybody. Please hit like.
Oh, we got a draft Tuesday night.
Oh, yes. We have a live mock draft only on YouTube Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Be there for it. 8 p.m. again, Tuesday night. youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. If you're a listener and you don't go to our YouTube channel, please go to youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday, and we'll see you at 8 p.m. there. And obviously all of our podcasts stream there as well. You can watch us live. Okay, that's it for today's show. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.